Welcome, Nets fans, to another edition of the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Jack Manuel, as always. I'm joined by the incomparable Nick Fay. How are we, mates?
Doing great, Jack. Ready to talk some Nets basketball. Happy to have you in the hosting role, giving me a little bit of a break after doing banging out all those previews on the NBA outlet.
Mate, you're doing work. You're doing work. But you can find all those as well as the Brooklyn Buzz on Block Talk Radio, iTunes. We're everywhere. YouTube, check us out. Find us on Twitter as well. But plenty to talk about, despite the fact that it being the end of August, going into September, my friend. We had Coach Kenny making some comments, and I'm going to quote these from verbatim. So the first one, listen, from that first day I was here, I've never been a predictor or gave win totals. I think we'll make another positive step forward. What are your thoughts on this one, mate?
I love it. And I think this is kind of the message we've been getting from Kenny for a while since he took over the job, especially in this situation, not having all the assets and the young, talented players. Kenny just wants to see the team improve. And like we've talked about on previous shows, there's things that they can't control, the referees, the injuries, the shooting percentages. But if guys keep getting better, and I think there's areas where they can improve defensively, effort-wise, consistency, do those type of things, and Kenny's going to be happy. And the other stuff will just kind of come along. If you're constantly improving, you're only going to get better, and eventually you're going to start to hit your goal.
Yeah, I think the good coaches don't preach wins and numbers and all these sort of things. They just let the processes take care of themselves. And I think being a process-driven coach, a player development coach, as we sort of say ad nauseum about Coach Kenny, I think it works really well in terms of what we have in terms of our roster right now, in terms of where we want to be going forward, being one of the top organizations in the next, half decade or so. But not putting those restrictions on, the players and then the team as a whole, I think, it creates limitless sort of goals and possibilities for this team into next season. But there certainly are going to be an improvement in wins. It would be disappointing, but like you said, there are those unforeseeable things, and control the controllables, as our guys like to say. But another one he said about our roster, Coach Kenny, I think for one thing, we have a nice mixture of veterans and youth. They're all guys with high basketball IQs, guys who have all had success in the league. I think it's huge to have veteran guys that know the tricks of the trade. What do you think about this one, Nick?
I think it kind of sends a message about Kenny's and Sean's relationship is, Kenny, I think any head coach in the NBA, having some veterans is going to make their life easier. Sending a message across, guys who understand what they want, instead of a young guy who might be in the league for 2 or 3 years, they still really don't have a full feel. It's like having another coach on the floor and having another guy where they can kind of really rely on. Sometimes it's easier to talk to a teammate than it is to talk to a coach. And like, for example, having a guy like Ed Davis, Jared Dudley, around, they can really help these guys. Like, I just envision Ed Davis helping Jared Allen a lot, and not only just on the practice court battling each other, but just kind of telling him little things he can do on the court, like, hey, Jared, step out a little bit more on here, set the screen a little bit harder. If you roll a little bit quicker or you slow down a little bit, it might help you. So I think there's just a whole bunch of little things that having veteran players will do, and it'll kind of just improve the guys in a different way. Obviously, the coaches do a great job, but it'll help them from a player's perspective that's just always a little bit different.
Yeah, I think going into training camp as well, those things are going to be really invaluable. There's sort of been, limited communication, as obviously you're doing in general your own thing during the off season, whether it be media commitments or, charity sort of commitments, which we'll talk about with some players, and, spending time with family and doing your own thing. But I think going into training camp, there's sort of the relationships are starting to be built, and they're going to be solidified and growing further from that. But I think, yeah, getting in these veterans are only going to have a positive effect. We saw what Damari Carroll did as basically the sort of lone veteran, with Jeremy Lin to a lesser extent. But, we still see Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell speaking so highly of what Jeremy Lin did for them. So adding in guys like Ed Davis or a guy like Jared Allen, Jared Dudley, for what he's done and probably the sort of impact he's had on Devin Booker. Devin Booker has spoken so highly of him, and, having that sort of prior relationship with him is going to bode really nicely for a guy like D'Lo, who is best friends. But another thing that he mentioned is, about the team as a whole. The hope is to be more consistent. As a coach, look at the whole game. What we did in the first quarter coming out of the half, and yes, do better in the last 5 minutes. Nick, thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is kind of an obvious thing. The Nets need to be more consistent. We saw them for stretches of games, stretches of quarters. It was very rare we saw the Nets play a complete game last year. Great 4 quarters, and maybe good 3 quarters, good 2 quarters, and then the other one they kind of fall off, or they have a lead, they let go of the lead, or it's a tie game, and all of a sudden it's a blowout. So I think obviously being self-aware, not only from a coaching perspective in terms of like the whole team, but I think Kenny knows, trying to find different ways to motivate his team and make sure they're doing the right things on the floor. And it's all the right messages. You want to, and one of the most important things in sports and life and basketball is being self-aware. And I think the Nets are very good at that.
Yeah, do you think, Nick, the added depth to this roster that we've just spoken about is going to allow us to be a more consistent team across four quarters?
I do. And we talked about fatigue being an issue at certain points, but I also think having veterans too, which we just talked about, is going to help as well. You know, for example, if you bring in a young guy who doesn't have the energy right to start the quarter, you can sit him, bring in a vet who's going to do the right thing, or these guys can kind of get in the player's head, you know, some of the veterans, and talk to the younger guys and be like, all right, we need to come out strong this quarter. We want to finish the game. You know, we know this team, they have big third quarters or they go on big runs. We need to make sure we're on top of it. So I think it really could benefit them. And the depth is just only going to be, you know, another asset for the team and the coach.
Yeah, and I talked about, I remember on the outlet with Nicholas Latorno of Nets Republic, the fact that we had little depth, and you know, our clutch stats were one of the poorest in the NBA. You know, we were shooting under 40%. You know, guys like Spencer Dinwiddie, who had some major clutch moments, and you know, including, you know, that Detroit game that we spoke so highly of. You know, I think having so many guys to look around to, and you know, D'Lo taking a jump, and you know, hopefully healthy, and hopefully all of our guys are healthy, I think all these things are going to make a difference in making us a better clutch team. Because generally, the better clutch teams, the better clutch players, they're the top team. You know, LeBron James is one of the most clutch players of all time, one of the best players of all time. You know, Stephen Curry, all these sort of guys. If you prove it in the most important times of the game, that's when you make a name for yourself. You know, that's when the cameras are watching. That's when the Sports Center moments are happening. That's where you see it all over Instagram. So if we see more of those clutch moments, you know, a consistency in those clutch moments, I think the Nets are going to take a real step forward.
Yeah, and I think they'll learn a lot from last year. You know, being in these moments, guys have never been. Some of the players that were in clutch moments last year, it's the first time in their NBA career that they were relied upon in the last 2 minutes of a game to, you know, get a bucket, get a rebound, defend somebody. So I think they're just going to learn from that and kind of learn about the intensity that changed later in the game. You know, the way you play a team in the first quarter and the way you play them in 2 minutes is a pretty big difference.
Yeah, and I'm intrigued to see as well sort of like the different looks, the different rotations, the different sort of play schemes that Coach Kenny's going to come out with these in certain sort of times, whether it's at the start of quarters, at the end of quarters. It's going to be a very fascinating watch for and fascinating storylines for our team going forward. But Jared Allen was his usual awesome self doing some charity work. So Jared Allen was providing some haircuts, you know, which they supplied to some Brooklyn kids. And he told Nets Daily, I've been working in the gym a lot, trying to improve my decision-making, then obviously shooting. You've got to work on shooting nowadays. I've been working on it literally every day, shooting threes, mid-range, everything. I'd say I'm shooting at least 50 threes a day, almost 100. So what do you think about that, Nick? You think, are we going to see, you know, one or two threes per game from Jared Allen next season?
Before I comment on that, I just want to give Jared Allen a shout out for being, yes, you know, a sophomore player, giving back to the community. Like you mentioned, he already did it the previous season as well as a rookie. And he said it's very important to him. If you read the article on Nets Daily, he's been doing it for a long time. It's the way he was raised. His family did work, you know, with different types of charity when he was younger. He went to church a lot. So just having a good mentality and that being one of your franchise cornerstones is just such a relief in a way. And it's just such a positive message for the fans and the young kids who follow the team, being like, you know, Jared Allen's an actual role model. But talking about his three-point shooting, I mean, this is something that we kind of anticipated a little bit. I know you and I, we talked about it a lot, some of it being on the show, some of it being off the show. I expected him to shoot more threes this season, especially with some of the acquisitions. And I think the way in Kenny's system, and like you mentioned, you know, Kenny doesn't really put a limit on anybody. So Jared Allen could knock down threes. That's going to change his game. You know, that's going to take him to another level. His ceiling just got a lot higher. I think we're definitely going to see probably at least one or two threes a game, especially if he starts to find a good rhythm. And we know from what we know about Jared Allen, great work ethic. So I expect to see him shoot a solid number from three. And we know his jump shot did not look bad last season.
No, it wasn't. It was the mechanics were perfectly fine. I think for him, it's going to be about confidence with all players, you know, in the NBA. I think it's going to be about, you know, if he misses that first one, is he going to take the second one? You know, for a guy like Wanda Hollis Jefferson, is probably similar as well. I think being able to just coach Kenny to preach to him, you know, take them. We don't care. Just take them. You know, and I think, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie had that sort of confident mentality. And despite his percentages being quite low, you know, he was still a threat from there. You know, everyone knew that Spencer Dinwiddie was a perfectly fine three-point shooter, despite the fact that percentages not reflecting that. I think Jared Allen needs to take them no matter what. You know, he's 7 foot, if not, you know, 6 foot 11. He can take those shots and shoot them over generally anyone, you know, other than maybe, you know, and there aren't many great perimeter defenders at the center position. You know, I think a lot of them are going to want to stay home anyway. So if he obviously works on his handle a little bit, and as we'll mention in a little bit further, I think it's going to add a new dimension to his game, because we've compared him to, like, you know, Clint Capella. But Clint Capella, I can't remember the last time I saw him do anything but dunk and, you know, do these little, and he's got really nice sort of post moves and around that sort of 5 to 8 foot range. And he's miles ahead of Jared Allen at this stage. But, you know, if Jared Allen can add a new string to his bow, it's going to be something really positive for him.
Yeah, and another thing you always bring up is free throw percentage. And Jared Allen at this point compared to Clint Capella is a lot better free throw percentage shooter. He improved a lot last year, and I think that's just a promising sign. And I think we saw this a little bit with Brook Lopez when he was still with the Nets and shooting threes. It opened up the floor so much because, like you said, it's tough for centers to come out all the way to the three-point line. They end up getting caught a lot in no man's land where they're kind of in between the three-point line and the paint, and that just opens it up on backdoor cuts, drives to the rim. If he's able to knock down, I want to say 35%, from three, that'd be a real game changer for the Nets offense.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Brook Lopez has become one of the better big man, stretch big men in the NBA, and that's all because of Coach Kenny giving him the green light to do so. You know, he barely gets off the ground at being, you know, that 7'1" or so, but, you know, he looks perfect, and I think he's going to add something to the Bucks, but we could do a whole pod about Brook Lopez. But Jared Allen made some other comments as well, and this is on his, you know, decision-making and as well as, you know, further on that three-point shooting. You know, I want to get better at it. In the new NBA, you have to be able to shoot. That's really how the league is going right now. So we need to adapt to the new age. I grew up watching Back to the Basket. Now I've got to catch up with everything. And he also talked about improving his decision-making. Out of the pick and roll, if I can't roll straight to the rim, they're making plays to pass to the corner, pass to the wing, things like that. Passing and shooting, those seem like some really intriguing things for Jared Allen's game, Nick.
Yeah, for sure. And like we just said, it could help take his ceiling to another level. The one thing I'm intrigued about, I mean, the shooting is something I anticipated and I kind of had a feeling it would happen, especially with the mindset Kenny has and the three-point shooting we see in the Nets offense. And like you mentioned, Brook Lopez. But the fact he's already working on passing and getting caught in that no man's land in terms of the pick and roll, rolling to the rim, I think is really impressive. And we saw some positive signs last year. It wasn't like he was an elite passer or anything, but he showed signs of being a solid passer. And he's able to kind of just handle that situation and not get frazzled like we see happen to a lot of bigs that are good at, you know, rolling to the rim. You know, sometimes they'll get cut off and not sure what to do and they'll end up traveling. I've said this before. So I think the fact he's working on that and working on all aspects of his game and trying to become a complete player at such a young age too. You know, a lot of times you don't see guys working on specific details in their game this young, but the fact that Jared Allen had such a good feel last year for some of the basic things allows him to kind of capitalize on some of the smaller details this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're seeing guys like Andre Drummond adding this passing element to his game, and, you know, it turned him into an all-star, and, you know, it's 5-6 years into his career. You know, it's to be able to add so many different elements to his game, you know, going into his sophomore season, you know, it's pretty remarkable. And I think that speaks volumes to his work ethic, to his mindset. And I think, you know, if he can keep, for me, it's with any player, like I mentioned, I'm going to preach it and preach it and preach it. It's going to be about confidence, you know, being able to, you know, if you have that turnover, you know, put it behind you. I think he's got that great mentality. We've spoken before in earlier buzzers, the fact that Rondo Hollis Jefferson was saying, you know, the main thing that he had, you know, he got a sports psychologist and was sort of focusing on play by play and being able to put the last, you know, whether it was a mistake, whether it was a good shot, just focusing on, you know, the next thing at a time and being able to have that level mindset. And I think that's one thing that Jared Allen does have. You know, we don't see, you know, these, you know, huge, you know, Instagram posts or Twitter posts or whatever from him. But we know that, you know, he wants to work hard. We've seen the Bleacher Report article as well. So hopefully these are all things that bode well for him going into next season. I think he could be really, really important for the Nets and their, you know, fringe playoff chances.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And the fact we've heard, you know, comments from Kenny about Jared Allen having that internal confidence and wanting to be great and not necessarily showing it. I've compared it to, you know, like the mentality that Kawhi has. Obviously, we don't want to have all the off-the-court stuff and forcing a trade out of San Antonio. But, you know, the fact that Kawhi is such a great player and he doesn't show a ton of emotion, I think I see something similar with Jared Allen where he wants to be great. He doesn't show a ton of emotion, but he's confident in his ability. And he said last year, you know, a lot of people thought he'd be in the G League, and he was confident that he was going to see time on the floor and take that next step. And I think he's confident in himself and becoming a great player.
Yeah, absolutely. And another guy who's certainly on that trajectory as well is D'Lo, who spoke to the media as well. And I quote him here. "I wake up every morning and go to train, and I feel like I'm in the best shape. I don't know. The sky is the limit." Nick, thoughts on Mr. Loading?
That's what you want to hear from Deloading. You know, the sky is the limit for him. There's a lot of potential. We know he can be an all-star type player. We talked about it on the NBA outlet, Brooklyn Nets season preview, that he could possibly get to a level. He could be maybe one of these top 10 point guards in the league. There's just a lot of potential with his vision, and his body is a thing that he can control, and he can kind of help himself athletically take another step by spending time in the gym. And it's nice to hear that he feels healthy. And I think he's starting to mature based off comments we've heard from D'Angelo and comments we've heard from people around him, being Kenny, Sean Marks, that he's looking to take the next step physically.
Yeah, and I'm really loving the sort of hype train that Jared Dudley's giving for him as well. Yeah. You know, we saw the retweet with the fire emojis from him from Mike Scotto's article as well. So, you know, I think the amount of encouragement he's going to be given every single he's going to be given all the reins to improve and all the opportunity to sort of, you know, take it by the reins and go, okay, this is my season, this is my team. And he's doing all the right things, the habits, they're you know, doing the right things in training, you know, working out, all those sort of things. For me, I actually kind of like the fact that, you know, he's sort of lessened the sort of social media game when it comes to the sort of workouts and stuff. And, you know, this is always an area for debate. It's like, you know, if you don't post it, did you really work out? You know, I don't really, I mean, if it's like a more natural piece, like we love the J. Cole blow up sort of piece that he had on his Instagram. But at the same time, he's still doing the work. You know, he's not just doing it for the likes on Insta, for the likes on Twitter and stuff. You know, he knows what he's good at, and he knows what he has to do to sort of hit that sort of, you know, hit his potential and hit his ceiling. And I think, you know, doing the right things, you know, when the cameras aren't watching is a really positive step, because, you know, some people might have argued about D'Lo's mentality, his mindset, but I think right now, as you mentioned, that maturation is one thing that speaks volumes to him.
And I like the fact that he said the sky is the limit. Like, he's not capping himself. He's unsure about how great he can be. And I think it's like underlining confidence that he knows that he can be a great player. And he's not willing to say like, oh yeah, I'm just going to be, you know, a starting player, an all-star. Like, he thinks that he can be a really great basketball player. And I think that's really important, especially for motivation in terms of taking extra steps, not only at this point where he hasn't broken out yet, but when he gets past that point, it's, you know, little things every summer just trying to get better.
Yeah, once you hit that sort of point of where you reach the sort of like, okay, we know this guy can play now. It's being able to maintain that consistency. And we saw, you know, ever so minor flashes of it early in the season last year, like we talked about on the outlet, but it's going to be, you know, a slow burner for him. Can he maintain that sort of level of consistency, that level of elite play? And, you know, Coach Kenny mentioned the fact that, you know, we had guys that showed, you know, that sort of broke out of their shells, so to speak. But, you know, we now need a guy to sort of step up and hit that top 30, top 50 mark in the NBA. And, you know, D'Lo's definitely the guy that's going to be the probably most likely to do that. You know, your boy Caris LeVert has all the tools to sort of break into that mold as well. But, you know, D'Lo also made some other comments as well, and, you know, talking about his motivation even further. I've seen guys get better, and we brought in a few other guys to help. I think those games that we lose at the end of the year last year, we win those games. And those games that we win by 5 and should have won by 15, I think we're hungrier as a group and we'll manage that. Thoughts?
I love it. I think they know that there was opportunities they kind of blew last season. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, not playing complete games, having veterans to kind of get after you or do the small things that make you win games. I think it'll be big. And those games that you only win by 5 that you should have won by 15 or 20, they're lost opportunities in the sense of getting young guys player development and getting guys rest, where the Nets really didn't have many blowouts last year. I mean, you could probably count them all on one hand how many times they blew out a team. So I think this year, getting some more of those games where you can take a night off. Obviously, the NBA has done a great job making the schedule not as bad. But now there's, you know, where you have a back-to-back, or you have, you know, 3 games in 5 nights or something along those lines. Having a quarter off or an extra 5 minutes off the court is going to make a big deal.
Definitely. And I think D'Lo spent some time on the bench, or plenty of time on the bench, with his injury as well. And I think he probably learned a few things or two as well, just sitting there observing next to the coaches and stuff. You know, obviously nothing beats being out there and sort of being able to, you know, fully immerse yourself in, you know, the happenings of the NBA, but also being a, you know, an outside observer. We saw the you know, what happened with Ben Simmons spending the entire season, you know, obviously the not rookie sort of campaign was in full force, but being able to just be a part of the NBA system, seeing it from the different perspectives, I think it's going to be really positive for him. And he's had, you know, plenty of ups and downs across his career, but I think, you know, he's all in on the team mentality as well. And you mentioned, you know, I think he's going to be out there. People are sort of expecting, you know, 20, 25 points a night for 23 points a night from him. What, like you've said, I think, you know, the 8 assists is one thing that I'm more excited about. And I think it's something that's a real possibility. Like, if you were given a choice, Nick, if he was to go 22-5-5 or 18-8-5, what would you prefer?
I'd go with 18-8-5. I think, yeah, it Well, I'm a big believer in making your teammates better. That's why I'm really big on the LeBron bandwagon, and you know, I was big on the Jason Kidd bandwagon, just because they're guys that literally make their teammates better. Like, I think that Cleveland, this is all completely off topic, but I think Cleveland is going to be not a good team this season. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, and I think a lot of that's going to be because LeBron put guys in great position to win and make life easier on them. Yeah, he has the ball in his hands a lot, but getting wide open shots in the corner or just having less worry from the defense, like, you're not going to leave LeBron James. You know what I mean? So I think having a player like D'Angelo who can make his teammates better, I think is a huge plus. And I think that's the mindset he needs to have. And we kind of saw it a little bit late last year. And Kenny, I think, wants that as well. And also to touch on that comment one more, I think we're hungrier as a group. So not only is D'Lo saying he's hungry, and we've kind of got this feeling from all the comments we've heard from guys, from Joe Harris to Damari Carroll to Caris LeVert, Jared Allen. These guys are hungry. They want to get in the playoffs. They're sick of losing. They don't want to have all these games and watch other teams play. So I think the fact that the group is hungry, D'Lo's hungry, I think it's just a good mentality for a young team to have.
Yeah, there's plenty of opportunities for that hunger. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, he's going to earn himself a big payday. D'Lo as well. Obviously, he's seen his best friend get it. You know, Caris LeVert and Alan Crabb have sort of – all these sort of guys, you know
– RHJ.
RHJ. All these guys have motivation. And you know, I think as well, D'Lo was talking about as well his role as the lead point guard or the lead guard. And it seems to be a phrase that he prefers over sort of point guard. And I like that. As well, I quote him. I think so. I know the opportunity is right there with veteran guys like that speaking out about it. That just shows it up for me. I'm ready to attack that role. What do you think about this lead guard thing, Nicholas? And also, what do you think about the fact that, you know, he's buying into sort of the hype trend that guys like Jared Dudley and Damari are giving him?
I think positionless basketball is the way the NBA is going. So technically, you could say D'Lo starting at the two because he's 6'5", but he's really the lead point guard. Like we see with Ben Simmons, like he does not fit the point guard measurements. You know, he fits more of the measurements of a small forward or a power forward, but he's playing point guard. So he's technically leading the show. And I think that's the same vibe you're kind of getting from D'Angelo. The guy is going to have the ball in his hands, set everything up, get things moving offensively. But to touch on the rest of the comment, you know, I like it. You know, sometimes pressure is good. You know, it's not always bad. Stress isn't always bad. It kind of puts you in situations where you have to kind of take the next step. And you putting pressure on yourself, I think, can allow him to kind of get to another level. And having confidence and pressure from people outside, not only yourself, kind of puts another, you know, another weight on your back. But sometimes it can be a good thing and help you get to another level.
You need pressure to make diamonds, Nicholas. Yeah. You need pressure to make diamonds.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to sound too corny.
Well, I'll do it. I'm the corny dude here anyway. But yeah, I think, you know, you can't reach your fullest potential unless you're challenged, you know. And I think, you know, there's been elements of the fact that, you know, the Nets have sort of been gone under the radar. You know, there's sort of, you know, no one really pays attention to them last season, apart from, you know, our buzz listeners, us and Nets Twitter and such. But the fact now that they're getting some attention, there's a little bit of pressure on them from, you know, the coaches, from the front office, from outside expectations, the media. Are they going to land a free agent? Are they going to make the playoffs? You know, being able to not just, you know, meet those expectations, but exceed them, you know, individually and as a team. And I think having expectations, having pressure is when you see the best results from any individual, no matter what the situation is. Yeah, I think we're turning into a bit of a motivational podcast out here. You know, you do you guys, who if you're listening at home, but I'm all for this. And I love the lead guard sort of thing because, you know, we talk about, you know, you talk about positionless basketball now. You know, it's not just the front court, you know, these sort of unicorns that are happening now that are sort of changing the sort of role in the NBA in terms of the positions. You know, guards these days, you know, they're not, there's no pure point guards anymore. We don't see Jason Kidd, you know, Rajon Rondo. You know, we don't see many of those guys anymore. We see, you know, heavy scorers, you know, insane three-point shooters. We see, you know, awesome passes with some, you know, nice sort of mid-range games. You know, all these sort of different things. And I think being able to just put yourself in a pigeonhole is not necessarily what you want to do with guys. And I think, you know, we hark back to the comments of what Coach Kenny was sort of saying. You know, we don't want to have any sort of like lofty goals. We don't want to have put any restrictions on our guys in that sort of sense. And I think that sort of relates to this as well, not being able to go, well, D'Lo, you only have to play one, or Caris, you're only a one or two. You can't play three or four or whatever. Or, you know, Ed Davis or Kenneth Reed, you know, we're only going to put you at the four or the five. I think that is going to be really positive for so many guys, especially with their roster composition as well, being able to buy into that positionless mentality. And I think Coach Kenny's going to be all about it as well.
Versatility is one of the most important things in basketball, especially the way it's going with all the switching and whatnot. And versatility is just overall an important, you know, skill to have in everyday life. You know, the more things you can do, the better off you're going to be, and more people are going to, you'll be able to help people in different ways. You know, on the basketball court, if you can shoot, pass, and make other people better, or, you know, shoot threes, drive to the rim, or whatever you can do, it's going to benefit the team and allow, make the coach's life a lot easier too.
Yeah, the Brooklyn Buzz motivational audiobook out soon, guys. Catch the ebook on Amazon. But let's get some 2K ratings. Get some 2K ratings, my friend. I know I'm about that 2K life, and there's been plenty of controversy about these ratings. But we'll talk about purely our Nets. You want to see the other guys, you know, hit up Twitter, hit up wherever. But we're about our Nets, boys. And the starting five was released. You know, we spoke about D'Lo a little bit, and he's 83. But the other four players. So we had D'Lo at 83, Alan Crabbe at 76, Damari Carroll at 77, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at 78, and our boy Jared Allen at 78. Are these on the mark, Nicholas? Too high, too low? Give me your take.
Honestly, I don't even know, Jack, because the 2K ratings have been so bad. Like, they're all over the place, and I really don't even know what they're judging them on. Like, some of it makes sense, and then you see some guys that are, like, way worse than Alan Crabbe have a higher rating, or guys like, I don't know, I think Carroll should probably be a 78. If Rondae's a 78, maybe put up Crabbe to a 77 if you want to take one or two away from D'Lo and put him at, like, an 81 to give it to the other guys. But I think I was pretty happy about Jared Allen getting a 78 because I feel like he doesn't get much love, and the fact that he got a high 70 I thought was good. But it's really hard. Like, the fact that Jabari Parker got an 81. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Jabari Parker, as you guys probably know from listening to the other buzzes. I just felt like I don't know what they're grading these guys on. Is it last season? Is it talent that they could have? Is it, what is it?
Yeah, is it their media managers emailing Ronnie 2K or something?
Are they sending him gifts?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? And I think as well, it's going to be interesting to see there's potential scores with these guys. And I think last year, you know, we had plenty of guys that had high potential scores. Caris LeVert was like a 75, but his potential score was like 80. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think, you know, a guy like Jared Allen, you know, D'Lo at an 83, I don't know how much higher his potential score can be, because, you know, we see guys like Kemba Walker only like an 86. And, you know, we see guys like Jason Tatum and Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell at 87. There's really weird rating system. And the fact that, like, you know,
some rookies got really high ratings too. Like, and they haven't even played a lick in the NBA, and they're better. Some guys that are solid veterans and role players, and I'm not trying to say the rookies aren't talented, but we haven't seen them do anything.
Yeah, like Luka Doncic as a 79. I think Trae Young was a 78 or 77. You know, the fact that these guys haven't really done much, and I think it's partly based off, like, you know, you want to bring in, you know, the eyes and sort of go, okay, well, I'm going to buy this game and make this guy, you know, make my guy like an 85 or whatever. But, you know, it's fun to debate, and I'll certainly be copping it. I believe it's out September 11th. Plenty of fans, you know, make sure, you know, we might chuck out our, if you want to slide into our DMs at the JMNJBT at OTG Nick, you know, if you want to find us on online or whatever. I know Nick's got the Xbox, I've got the PS4. So we got both consoles covered for you there, Nick. But do you think, okay, how is Joe Harris not a 95? But I'll put that to you right now. I'm obviously joking, but I read an article on NetStat because I was looking up last year's ratings. I think Joe Harris was like a 72. So if my boy Joe Harris ain't a 75 or higher, then I'm emailing Ronnie 2K and every sort of, you know, developer and involved with 2K19, and sort of, you know, I'm going to write and march in California or Silicon Valley or wherever they're making this thing. Because what do you think Joe Harris should be? I mean, we can turn this into
a Joe Harris 75 podcast. Should be good. I think a 70. Yeah. If Crabbe is I think Crabbe might be a little bit low. I think Joe Harris is probably a 76. I mean, like I said, I really don't know what the hell these ratings are based on, but I think Joe Harris is a very solid player, and he does a lot of, like, small things. It's not like he has any super big weakness in his game. Obviously, he's not going to create and run pick and roll for you and be, you know, your lead point guard or anything, but he's going to be a nice wing that can shoot threes, drive to the rim, play solid defense. So I think a 75, 76 would be really fair.
Yeah, definitely. But now on to my social media segment, the social media sleuthing. Plenty of stuff on Nets Instagram, plenty of stuff happening around. I've saved plenty of guys, so don't worry, I'm not going to be running out of any content for this. But Nick, I put to you, and this is from Clutch Nets on Instagram, they have an over or under Nets over or under 32 0.5 wins. It's a nice number, and it's one that, you know, when I saw, I'm like, ooh, where do we go from there? And we did our, for those that don't know, we did our previews and our predictions on the NBA Outlet Brooklyn Nets preview series, you know, with Nicholas Letourneau. Make sure you guys listen to that. But if you want to hear, you know, it again or hear a different sort of take, Nick, what do you got for me? What do you think about this one?
So I'm pretty strict in terms of keeping consistent when I make predictions, especially before the season, and nothing has really changed. So I predicted, I want to say, you know, between 36 and 38. Yeah, I think 30. Actually, I think I predicted like 37 or 38 wins. It's so long ago. It was last week. No, but definitely I'm going with the over here. I think over 32, because if they were to win just 32 games or anything less, it would be really not a huge improvement. I think everything they've done in terms of player development and depth, like we talked about on that show, I think they should get over 32. Even if it was slightly over 32 and it was only like 34, I think they'll definitely get over that hump, long as anything crazy doesn't happen injury or trade wise.
Yeah, funnily enough, 34 was my number, I think, that I gave on the preview. And that's one that I'm going to stick to. I like to sort of, you know, underpredict so we can overachieve in my sense, because I don't want to jinx our boys and go too high on them. But another one from Nets Season, Nets SZN, or Z, whatever you want to pronounce it. Which is most likely? One, Nets make the playoff. Two, D'Lo wins most improved player. Three, Dinwiddie averages 15 points per game. Or four, Jarrett Allen averages a double-double. Four scenarios for you there, Nicholas. What do you think is the most likely out of them?
Honestly, one just really sticks out, and I think that's four, Jared Allen averaging a double-double. I don't think it's super difficult for him to do. You know, he's going to see increased minutes this year. He's going to be bulkier. He understands rebounding is important. That's an area he can improve on. He has great length, so I can see him grabbing a couple offensive boards. I think that's an easy one, to be honest, because most improved player for D'Angelo is tough, because it's like somebody could have a really big season, somebody could get hurt, or, you know, a bad team could have a guy just, you know, have a star role or something like that. And then if you look at Spencer Dinwiddie averaging, I think, what was it, 15 points per game? You know, I'm not really sure how many shots he's going to be taking, if he's going to be more of a facilitator for that second unit. And like we said on the preview, with the playoffs are more of a toss-up. I think I gave the Nets 46% chance or something like that. So I think I'm going with Jared Allen double-double. What about you?
Yeah, I'd probably go with that as well. I wouldn't be surprised with Dinwiddie averaging 15 points per game. I'm working on a piece for Nets Republic about the fact that I think, you know, Dinwiddie is a dark horse for a six-man of the year contender. And I think if he buys into that role, I've sort of hinted at it at times, you know, in terms of when D'Lo came back last season. I think 15 points per game isn't out of the realms of possibility, because of, you know, his percentages last year weren't great, and he averaged about 12.6, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that, but it was definitely close to 13 points per game. So if he gets, you know, one more bucket on better percentages, I think it's certainly a possibility. So I wouldn't put that out of context as well, out of the realms of possibility. But yeah, Nets making the playoffs might be a little bit more unlikely. You know, we see teams like the Pistons, the Hornets. I know you're not a big Cavs fan, but they still have Kevin Love, an all-star, a proven all-star. I don't know what's going on with Rodney Hood, but there's certainly
a great question for me for the Cavs too, is how many games is Kevin Love going to play?
Yeah, I mean, health is always the number one thing in any NBA, but, you know, especially for a guy like Kevin Love and a team that's going to rely very heavily on him. But yeah, I think, you know, I'll ask you, Nick, because I need some quotes for my piece. What do you think of Spencer Dinwiddie's chances as a possible six-man of the year contender?
I think a big chunk of that could depend on how he works with D'Angelo Russell. You know, based off everything that we're predicting and we foresee, and, you know, just quotes and the feel from the organization has been D'Angelo's the guy. They want him to be that all-star type player. So he's going to be the guy seeing big minutes. He's going to probably see 30-plus minutes. I think that's a likely scenario. Now, Dinwiddie and him weren't great together last year. Obviously, it was a small sample size. Can these two work well together? If they can, you know, Dinwiddie's going to come off the bench. He's going to see good minutes, and they can kind of definitely have a nice combination. I could see it as a possibility, because he almost won most improved player this year. And going to a six-man role, going against lesser competition, playing against more bench units, having a better feel, and obviously improving his efficiency this year, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities, but I'm just unsure of his role with this team at the moment. You know, much as I know, D'Angelo could struggle and they were playing Dinwiddie more minutes. You know, you never really know what's going to happen, but his role is just so hard to predict in terms of minutes and production. Is he going to be more of a passer? Is he going to be more of a scorer? What are we going to see from that second unit? Is Caris LeVert going to have the ball in his hands more? Like, that's Dinwiddie has a really hard role to predict.
It is. It's his role is probably the hardest predict on this team due to guys like D'Lo and Karis, like you mentioned. We know he's an elite passer. You know, he's top 10, one of the best assist to turnover ratio, top 10 in assists as well. You know, he's an awesome player when it comes to running the floor in terms of, you know, that 15 points per game and his scoring. You know, we know his potential there. But, you know, I appreciate that. But I also put it to Jackson Frank, who is an awesome supporter of my stuff and OTG stuff as well. And he sort of thought, because he wants to see Dinwiddie start. And, you know, if that's going to be the case, you know, like you mentioned, chemistry with D'Lo is going to be a huge thing. And I think this offseason, I think they're going to be working a lot together. I think, you know, the play schemes and, you know, I think health-wise, you know, in terms of consistency and developing that sort of synergy with each other, when you're not out on the floor with each other and, you know, you can't, you know, get much training because during the season, you don't get a lot of time, you know, don't get a lot of off days. You know, it's a long, long season, plenty of games in between and not much break time. So I think, you know, developing that synergy, you know, in the offseason, all our guys are healthy. I think it's going to hopefully bode well for him. And as well, it's going to be about how many games he starts, what is his role. But I'll put another one to you, Nick, a final one from Nets season as well. This was a mock trade. The Nets receive Stanley Johnson, John Lua, and Henry Ellenson, and the Pistons receive Allen Crabb and a 2019 second-round pick. I'm going to guess I know your thoughts on this, but let's hear them anyway.
I'm going to say I have to look up John Lear's contract is over one season long, or
I think it's the last season of a $9 million deal, or it might be 2 years, $18 million.
Well, that's going to be a most important factor for me.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think he has a good game. You know, like he obviously hasn't worked out there. He has another year, so he's getting paid $9 million. He's $10 million this year, $9 million the next, 9.5 the next year. Yep. Stanley Johnson, I like, but he's an expiring contract as well. And then Henry Ellenson is the other guy you said. He hasn't really shown a ton either. I think at this point, I would probably not take the trade unless there was a situation where I knew I needed that extra $9 million in cap space. That, you know, is the difference between Crabb and Lear's deal. But yeah. I'm not like, you have a clean slate roster and like Crabb's a guy that you kind of like and he could fit with other players, you know, unless you really need to move him. I think that you don't make that trade. And it's tough to say though. It's like the mentality. I don't really know what's going to happen with Crabb either. You know, I think a lot of people have breakout season. They think it could be big. If he has a bad season, this might be a good trade. But based off what the Nets expect from him and what we saw at the end of last season, I don't think I'd pull the trigger. What about you?
No, I wouldn't either. I think, you know, Stanley Johnson has been linked to the Nets quite a bit and is in a similar vein to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, probably a better defender, you know, is almost in the elite category when it's in terms of that. And he's certainly the sort of, you know, the head of this deal, you know, John Lua, Henry Ellenson, they're whatever. They're sort of just, you know, money sort of making up the sort of cap. And that second round pick, you know, I don't want to give up picks for willy-nilly. I don't think Sean Marks is going to either. I think he's a little more strategic in that sense. And I think Allen Crabb's floor we saw last season in terms of the fact that, you know, injuries sort of curtailed him a little bit. You know, he didn't really get much consistency. And he still wasn't that bad. You know, yeah. I'm not as, you know, much of a hater on the Crabb. I'm a Crabb person, as you know, we're Crabb people here at the Brooklyn Buzz. And I think I said he was one of my breakout players for the outlet preview series as well. I think that he's gonna have a big season, and I can't see any reason why with that late season form. And he is an absolutely elite shooter. You know, Joe Harris is my boy, but Allen Crabb has proven it in spades. And you know, his form is just wet. He's really, really nice, really smooth. And I think he's going to have a big season. And I'm really hoping that he does as well.
Yeah, and I think the one thing Crabb can do that maybe Joe Harris can't do is like making the off balance and the awkward threes with a guy in his face, like the really contested ones that are just like, how did you make that? He has like that just talent where he just knocks down threes that you don't expect. And like you said, like the other guys, it's just like, is it really worth it? And I think, you know, we don't know enough about Crabb at this point to really make that trade. Like I said, if maybe it's next year around the draft or something where you're trying to dump the contract because you have rumblings that, you know, KD and Kawhi want to sign, you need to really cut some more cap. Yeah, pull the trigger. But in terms of player perspective, I think you're better off seeing what you have with Crabb because Stanley Johnson hasn't proved to have any type of offensive game. Ellison really hasn't cracked much of the rotation. And John Lear's just been pretty bad and probably looking at one of the uglier contracts in the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'll have more social media stuff for you guys next week. But as always, Nick, thanks for jumping
on. Wait, Jack, I got a question for you.
Yeah, go.
you think that the so there's been a lot of talk. Obviously, the Phoenix Suns just traded Brandon Knight. They don't have a starting point guard. They got Ryan Anderson, who they're going to star, and they're trying to make the playoffs. Do you think the Suns will make a pitch for Spencer Dinwiddie and try to throw the Nets an offer? I think they've been linked to Kemba so far, Terry Rozier, Damian Lillard. So they're not looking for like a scrub. They're looking for a guy who can start games. And obviously Dinwiddie proved last year he could be a starter. And he kind of fits their timeline a little bit better than some of the other guys. So what do you think about the Suns making an offer for Dinwiddie?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by it because, you know, there was links to it already, you know, in the free agency period. We talked about a lot of guards and, you know, obviously Jeremy Lin left. I think I would like to see, you know, Spencer on our team. I'd like to see him on the Nets, but, you know, the Phoenix Suns are apparently aiming for the playoffs, and I think Spencer Dinwiddie does help that. I think, you know, alongside a backcourt of Spencer Dinwiddie and Devin Booker isn't too shabby in any sort of sense, but the likelihood of it, if I'm putting a percentage on it, I'd go 15%. You know, I'm not really too high on it. I want Spencer Dinwiddie to say, you know, I'm a big believer in sort of letting our guys sort of, you know, go out. If it's the case, you know, come mid-season and, you know, he wants to trade, and we've been asked before in sort of fan and question mailbag episodes, what's the likelihood of him demanding a trade? You know, I'd rather see Spencer Dinwiddie on our Nets right now. You know, he's talked about sort of what he wants to achieve, and I think the Nets have sort of been the impetus for helping him break out and become an NBA-level starter player. You know, if you're comparing him to guys like to Terry Rozier, guys like Kemba Walker. I know that Dylan Jackson is a big advocate for the Kemba Walker trade because, you know, he's been on the bandwagon as much as he's a big fan of him. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense for the Hornets going forward. But I'm torn somewhat. What do you think, mate?
I think the toughest thing with Spencer is, you know, you have him and D'Angelo going to the offseason, both being due for a contract. And I think that is a little bit scary in a way because you take the chance. Obviously, this happens. You know, sometimes there's nothing you can do about it, but losing a guy for nothing. You know, there's a chance if D'Angelo has an all-star season, then Spencer improves and looks like he's a really good backup that could start somewhere else. You're not going to re-sign him probably, especially if you're going after other free agents. But like you said, you kind of want to see what can happen. Is there a chance that Dinwiddie maybe could take a little bit of a pay cut to stay with the Nets? Maybe, but I'm not 100% sure. I think it would depend on the Suns' offer. What would it take from the Suns for you to send Dinwiddie to Phoenix?
It'd have to be a first rounder. And I think, I believe GNYR or some other people have brought up the fact that Bucks first rounder, which is, I think, is it 10 to 18 or 10 to 15 protected? Some old like lottery to 15 protected. But then it turns into 2 seconds, I think,
which
next
year. Which is kind of trash.
Which is not, and I think, you know, the Bucks obviously are going to be a good team, but who knows what could happen if Giannis has an injury or Middleton has an injury, they could fall off. So I'm always hesitant about protected first rounders or heavily protected first rounders as this one is. You know, Shaquille Harrison, you know, they've got all these sort of guys on the roster as well. They don't have a point guard, and I think Spencer fits that, but for you, would it take, is it a first rounder for you to like to be a guaranteed sort of move for Spencer Dinwiddie to get out the door?
Yeah, I think the Nets were offered a late first rounder, obviously last year from the Cavs, they didn't take it. So I think they're looking for something a little bit and more so in the middle of the first round. I would say if Phoenix wants to offer their first round pick, if they're so happy about trying to compete for the playoffs and they have so much confidence in this team, I'd be like, all right, throw that on the table. Like you said, the Bucks one is a little bit weird with the protections, but I think just to get to the table, you're looking at a first round pick, depending on the play of Dinwiddie. I mean, obviously he's a rental because he's an expiring deal, but I believe if you make the trade for him, you'll have the bird rights so you can offer him to a bigger deal and whatnot. So I mean, I think it would take a really good offer for the Suns, and I wouldn't be surprised because they kind of seem desperate in a way. You know, I know this isn't a Suns podcast, but, you know, you're starting Ryan Anderson. You're making a trade for Anderson, who couldn't even see time in the playoffs. So I don't know. Like, the Suns could kind of lose leverage. They made some funky moves in the past. I wouldn't be surprised if they threw something that was a little bit too big and the Nets couldn't resist.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? The front office of Ryan McDonough and his team is always questionable, but at the same time, they've been making, you know, up and down, low-key nice moves, low-key good moves. Who knows what they do when it comes to fighting their point guard search. But in terms of the contract for Spencer Dinwiddie, I think the max that he can get is similar to a Josh Richardson type deal, which is about $442, if I believe. Now, if we compare that to a guy like Marcus Smart, and I think I've done this before, who's on $452, I think that is a nice contract for Spencer. I don't think it breaks the bank too much. I think that you need to have those sort of mid-level contracts when you're comparing, like, Allen Crabbe is on $19 million, you know, what D'Lo could get if he, you know, absolutely breaks out. I think that contract is manageable and is almost market value. He's still only 25. Do you think that that's too much, too little? What do you think in terms of the money for a guy like Spencer?
I think that is going to depend on how he gels with D'Angelo. Because if you're paying somebody, you know, 10 mil, which isn't a ton, like you said, it's probably solid value for Dinwiddie. But if you can't play him on the floor with D'Angelo, now you're playing him a lot less minutes a game. And what are you playing him? Maybe, you know, 15 minutes. And obviously he's not worth that. If he can gel with D'Angelo and things are working out and they can kind of gel with each other, same thing with LeVert and whatnot, and Dinwiddie continues to improve and becomes more efficient, I don't think it's a bad deal at all. And like you said, it becomes a tradable contract too, in case you want to make a bigger move, you want to make a splash move.
Yeah.
And I think some of it, I saw an article, I'm not 100% sure, don't quote me on this, depending on when he signs the deal, can determine the amount. You know, if he extends or if he signs as a free agent or whatnot. I wouldn't be surprised, because the Nets will have his bird rights, if they were to go out and sign a couple guys, you know, if they're going to go after one of their max guys or some fringe all-star type players, and then they go over the cap to keep Dinwiddie, or they have something set up where, you know, it all depends on the schedule of signing certain players and whatnot to make it work and get over the cap. So I think that could be a possibility. I don't think they want to lose Dinwiddie, but I also think if somebody were to offer him a ridiculous deal, they might just be like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that would work well for both parties, but certainly watch this space, hashtag eyes emoji. D'Lo and Dinwiddie could literally have like their own sort of like, you know, running sort of reality show, like D'Lo and Dinwiddie. Like, it's just got a nice ring to it. You know, the cameras are on them on the plane and stuff. How are they going? What's going on the court? You know, it's going to be a really, probably one of the more fascinating storylines, and there are plenty of them for our Nets, but going into, you know, the 2018-19 season. But any last thoughts, Nicholas, before we end this one?
One last thought. Next week or the following week, we're looking to do a Brooklyn Buzz fan show. We were trying to do it this week. It was kind of my fault. I didn't reach out soon enough. But if you're interested in hopping on the show as a fan, giving your take, we're looking to have a couple, you know, 3 to 5 guys on, or girls, you know, do a little roundtable discussion, you know, favorite offseason move, breakout player, just some interaction with a fan. You know, we want to get you guys involved as much as possible. Reach out to Jack or I. You can also reach out to Off the Glass at OTG Basketball. You can reach me on email, offtheglassnf@gmail.com. Please don't send me anything crazy. But reach out to us. We'd love to have you on. We're looking to have a couple guys on, a couple girls on. And if it works out to do it next week, if we get enough people, we'll do more than one. But we definitely want to hear from you.
Yeah, you guys have made this, you know, the buzz grow from day one. And, you know, we want to reward you guys. You know, I think people are getting sick of hearing my docile tones, as I put on Twitter a little bit earlier. But, yeah, we want to make something for you guys. At the J-Man JBT, sliding those DMs. At OTG Nick, at OTG Basketball. We've told you all the sort of avenues. Hit us up. We want to see you. We want to hear you. This is all about you guys, and we appreciate every listen that you guys give us. And you know where to find us. You know, YouTube, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes. Subscribe, retweet, give us all the love. We appreciate it more than anything. And Nick, I appreciate you more than anything. And thank you as always, my friend.
Always happy to be talking hoops with you, Jack, and great job hosting today, switching it up. And like Jack said, please reach out to us. And if you want to debate with us and you think our opinions suck, feel free to jump on too.
True that.